Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Hello, this is Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson coming to you from my iPhone this week because I've been told to work from home after a coworker attended a conference with someone who has the coronavirus. So you know this is starting to get real. Joining me, as always, from Tallahassee is Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hello, Zach.
Well, coronavirus continues to rapidly expand in Florida, and some experts say drastic actions may be needed to contain this virus. We'll talk about how Governor Ron DeSantis is responding to the looming health threat, the coming showdown between Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden in Florida's March 17th primary, and the waning days of Florida's legislative session, which wraps up very soon. But first, you all know what that music means. There's a lot of numbers floating around right now between coronavirus statistics and the presidential primary coming up. John, you able to grab one for us?
Zach, I sure did. My number this week is a coronavirus-free 115.
115. John, its number has tested negative for coronavirus this week. We'll see if I can say the same. My number is 107. That's 115 for John, 107 for me. Remember those numbers, folks. Write them down. We will tell you what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, life comes at you fast, and that's certainly the case with coronavirus. It was only 12 days ago that Florida officials announced the first coronavirus case in this state. Since then, state officials have discovered cases of the virus in 15 counties with two deaths. Coronavirus is expanding rapidly across the entire nation. On Wednesday, President Donald Trump banned travel to the United States from Europe for 30 days, a huge move. The NBA suspended its season after a player tested positive for coronavirus. The March Madness college basketball tournament, which I'm a big fan of, that will be played without crowds this year because of coronavirus. And even Tom Hanks, beloved actor, announced that he has coronavirus. Here in Florida, universities are telling students to go home and prepare to do only online classes for at least the short term. Governor Ron DeSantis put new restrictions on nursing home visitation Wednesday because of the threat the virus poses to elderly individuals. Meanwhile, out in Washington state, the governor there just banned gatherings of more than 250 people, and schools have been shuttered in the Seattle area for what could be months. I spoke to a University of Florida infectious disease expert Wednesday who said Florida may have to consider a similar response to what Washington is doing right now, even though it could have absolutely enormous ramifications for the economy, for families with school children, for all of our daily routines. John, do you think it's dawning on Governor DeSantis the type of draconian measures that might be needed to contain this virus? And I wonder, do you think Florida's free market GOP leadership is prepared to clamp down hard on Disney World, other places where crowds continue to gather in large numbers?
I know this story is evolving with, you know, by the hour, it seems like, but I think right now the governor will support steps aimed at reducing exposure among public employees and at public institutions. But I have a feeling that he would not step in with any kind of directives to private companies like Disney or many of the others, the state's theme parks and attractions. As you point out, DeSantis is not only a Republican, but you know, he is also the chief executive of a state that depends heavily on tourism, which provides jobs and a huge portion of the state's sales tax, which in turn accounts for about 75% of Florida's general revenue. I would think that DeSantis at this point would let the private sector make its own decisions about how best to enact the recommendations that, you know, you try to limit social interactions, avoid crowds. We've seen it already with the NCAA announcing that the March Madness basketball tournament which includes Tampa as a site. That's going to be played without spectators. That's going to be a huge crunch for hotels, airlines, restaurants, everyone else who relies on these visitors. But, you know, DeSantis has stepped in and endorsed the move by Florida colleges and universities to go to online classes only and adding an extra week for spring break. He has stepped into the private sector a little bit by imposing some guidelines for private nursing homes that anyone who has been in a compromised situation, like traveling overseas or on a cruise ship or in a place where there's considered community spread, that you know, that they not visit residents in a nursing home, assisted living facilities, or group homes for that matter.
Sure. Those are private facilities. I mean, so he is imposing some new regulation on these private businesses, nursing homes and assisted living facilities and others, right?
Yeah. I guess that could be considered that. He's, kind of saying, I guess on a case by case basis that, people themselves should not go to these private facilities. But whether or not there comes to kind of cordoning off these places or anything like that, that is a big state, a big step for the governor to take. But, you know, as we mentioned, the story is unfolding. I think right now the message seems to be for Florida. They don't want to lock any doors to tourists, even if the reality is that many are likely not to be traveling here. And we're going to see a financial hit to our economy pretty soon in this state.
Well, the interesting thing, the president just locked some doors to tourists in banning travelers from Europe. I mean, how big of an impact could that have on Florida? There's a lot of European travelers to this state, right?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. And he is keeping the door open for England and Ireland, which is a pretty steady font of people coming to Disney, Central Florida. But you got to wonder, are people ready to up and travel right now, too? You know, are these English tourists going to be coming even as they are allowed to for the next 30 days? This is a big, you know, spring break time for Florida attractions. And, even within the state, I think there's got to be this, spirit across the state where moms and dads are saying, we're not going to, go anywhere on spring break. We're just going to sit home and wash our hands.
Yeah. I've heard people that I know cancel their spring break plans. People that were going to go skiing, go out of the state, didn't want to fly. What about schools, John? I mean, I think a lot of parents are starting to wonder about that. Seattle, that area just closed all of their schools. Italy's schools have been closed. I wonder, do you think state officials like Richard Corcoran, the state's education commissioner, have you heard anything about contingency plans if you have to start shutting down some of the K-12 schools? I mean, we've seen the universities basically close, that they're basically telling all the students to go home and basically take classes on your computer. But that's a lot harder to do for K-12 students.
It is. But I think that may be around the corner, because, again, that is a public institution that the state can take some steps to try to stop this kind of social interaction. And, of course, that has a giant ripple effect where suddenly, moms and dads that are going to work now have their children at home. So there's that factor, too, that, what do you do? How do you continue your life if you have, kids that no longer are going off to school for much of the day. That's got to be thought out a little bit, but I think that may be the next big move that we see in this state.
So some really big decisions that the governor and state leaders are facing here, from schools to whether to limit crowds. I mean, that could have a huge impact on Florida's economy. There's so many big events that are held here, but we've seen it already. We saw the Ultra Music Festival, which is a massive event in Miami. That got canceled. Now the March Madness games are being played in Tampa without crowds. Joe Biden was supposed to have a rally in Tampa on Thursday. He canceled that rally because of concerns about people contracting the virus in crowds. So, I mean, it's having an impact on the presidential primary here in the state as well. You know, it seemed like that entire primary might be over after Biden won 4 out of the 6 states on Tuesday, including notching a really big win in Michigan, a huge state that's considered a big bellwether. Trump won the state in 2016 after it being blue in presidential races for many years. But Bernie Sanders said the next day that he plans to soldier on and debate Biden on Sunday. So it looks like we still have a ball game here in Florida, which holds its primary on Tuesday. John, if Michigan didn't knock Bernie out of this race, do you think Florida will?
It is pretty amazing right now. There seems to be rising pressure on Sanders to abandon his campaign and help Democrats start consolidating what is surely looking like a Biden versus President Trump general election. Now Sanders, of course, is a very bold, singular thinking candidate with a very committed base of supporters. After last Tuesday, a bad one, he wasn't ready to quit. But maybe after the March 17th primaries, he will. When you think about Florida as the biggest delegate prize on the table until the New York primary in late April, and Biden is expected to run away with Florida right now. There is a debate in Arizona on Sunday night between Sanders and Biden. That may be the beginning of the end for Sanders, though, unless you see, a major stumble of some kind by Biden, which, as we have seen, he can be prone to. All 4 of the states that are going to vote next Tuesday, that's Florida, Ohio, Illinois, and Arizona. These are all places where Sanders lost to Hillary Clinton in 2016. And there are a lot of delegates at stake, and polls show that all these states right now are favoring Biden. In Florida, he's getting more than 60% of likely primary voters. Florida's got 219 delegates at stake, so that's a lot. That could go to Biden pretty quickly. And Democrats clearly want to flip it back to their side in the general election after Obama carried it in both of his elections, but Trump won it in 2016. Now, the thing that has been helpful to Biden all along here is that he has the demographic advantage because he does so well among voters older than 45, and he also does well among Black voters. Those are two large portions of the Democratic constituency in the state. And Sanders has been doing better among Hispanic voters in other states, but here in Florida, we recall, and we've spoken about this before on the podcast, his defense of the accomplishments of Fidel Castro's government has really inflamed the state's Cuban American population. So it seems like it'll soon be up to Biden to deftly put together a coalition with the Sanders base of young voters that are they're committed to real systemic change in this country, more of a focus on climate change, healthcare reform, and student debt. I think you're going to start seeing Biden, maybe after Florida, starting to embrace those kind of goals a little bit more publicly.
Yeah, some people are really wondering why Bernie is staying in the race. When you look at his poll numbers in states like Florida, there was a University of North Florida poll that came out today. 66% of Democrats in Florida support Biden, just 22% support Sanders. That's a 44% percentage point advantage for Biden. The director of the poll, Michael Binder, said, it looks like an absolute blowout in Florida. But, Bernie is a very different type of candidate. He's trying to advance his ideas. He's trying to advance a movement. He seems to want to get some assurances from Biden that he'll, take up some of the causes that Bernie has championed. I'm on Facebook. I have a lot of people that I follow for work on Facebook, and there's some local Bernie Sanders supporters that I saw post it on Facebook, and they said even they don't think that Bernie's going to win Florida, even though they're continuing to campaign for him. But they said we can still win some delegates potentially, and that gives us a voice at the convention. So there's some reasons why Sanders would stay in there, but it's going to become increasingly difficult for him. There's going to be pressure on him to unify the party. Most Democrats just want, you know, to focus on Trump at this point. So we'll see what happens after next Tuesday. Well, as coronavirus swirls and Florida's presidential primary looms, they're still trying to bring Florida's 60-day legislative session in for a landing up in Tallahassee, where John has been following all the action. John, this week we saw a virus scare on the House floor, drama over finishing up the state budget. Where are we as the 60 days approaches here on Friday?
Well, the end is near, but like a lot of session ends, many things are still unsettled. Today is Thursday as we record this podcast, and legislators are hoping to finish a state budget by tomorrow, that's Friday, and have it ready for the 72-hour waiting period that has to expire before a final vote can be taken. Although that would, you know, line up for a vote on Monday, with the primary coming Tuesday, legislators are expected to effectively end everything else session related on Friday, and then come back on Wednesday of next week to that would be the day after the presidential primary for the budget vote, and that would officially end the session. But as we speak now, there's still undecided plenty of big ticket items, a teacher pay package, the governor's push for businesses to use the federal database E-Verify to check the legal status of workers they hire, and a tax break package that is expected to get smaller as legislators worry about the economic impact of the coronavirus, and they're trying to keep some money in reserves for what is anticipated to be an economic downturn pretty quickly.
How much is coronavirus overshadowing everything? It seems like this is really starting to overtake pretty much discussions at all levels, from, you know, families up into the president here. And we saw on the House floor, there was a coronavirus scare this week, right?
There was five legislators had gone to conferences in Washington, D.C. very recently, where at these two conferences, somebody tested positive for coronavirus. And as a result of that, there was the decision made that these five legislators were going to self-isolate and, you know, presumably be subject to testing. That caused about an hour-long's worth of chaos in the state house on the Monday of this week, when they basically came in, they started cleaning all the desks in the house. The five were removed from the floor. Then, after about an hour, they brought them back, and they had declared that they had consulted with the state's Surgeon General, who had said that the odds of these people having been exposed at these conferences that they attended, you know, basically being in a building with somebody that later tested positive, that the odds that they would have any kind of infection was very small. So they let them come back, and it was sort of like, problem averted, evidently. But the Capitol right now is a petri dish of people. There's nothing that is stopping the legislature from doing its thing right now. But coronavirus is overshadowing a lot of things. But right now, there's no real decisions, I would say, that are being made related to coronavirus, because they're still trying to get their arms around it, you know, and try to quantify what impact it's going to have. So I, you know, other than they're talking about trying to keep aside about $200 million extra in reserves, and they're going to fund what the governor has requested, which is $25 million to sort of try to stop the spread of the virus in the state in some capacity. But beyond that, they're kind of watching and waiting. So they're going through the motions of finishing the session pretty much almost as they always would. But I think there is a feeling the legislature could be back in a special session very soon to have to maybe cut this budget that they're currently putting the final touches to.
Yeah, it seems to me like they're sort of rushing to kind of, you know, finish sort of business as usual while this thing just kind of explodes. And I wonder if, looking back, it's kind of going to be a question of, were you guys really focused on what the biggest issue is here, and trying to muster, you know, a strong response to this, you know, what could end up being a very, very serious health threat here? But I guess we'll see. Hindsight is 20/20. Well, we'll move on to some number picking here. John, your number was 115. You want to tell us what that's all about?
Yeah, well, with the legislature winding down, statistics through Wednesday show that 115 bills have passed out of almost 1,700 general bills that have been filed. Now, you know, not only is that a low success rate, only about 6% of the bills filed, but we may be on our way to a new decade low here at the Capitol. The last few days of session will increase that number, that 115 passage number. But given that there's always, you know, a flurry of bill passing in the closing hours of the session, but it looks pretty certain that we'll fall below last year's number of 189 bills passed and approved by Governor Ron DeSantis, which itself was a low going back to 2010. 2010 was a pretty robust year. They had 273 bills approved that year. But so we're looking at 3 years in a row now where the legislature is going to fall below the level of 200 bills passed during a session. Now, you know, the Republican legislature is not a big government fan, so maybe in their view, fewer bills passed are a sign of success. But we're about to experience a decade low when it comes to, you know, the general accomplishments statistically of this session.
Well, Republicans have had total control of the legislature and the governor's office for more than 20 years now. So maybe they're running out of ideas here. We're kind of
that's right. The revolution is over.
Well, my number is 107, as in a 107% increase in the number of coronavirus cases in Florida in just the last 3 days. That's right. The total number of cases on Monday was 14. As of this morning, it was 29. So we've seen the number of positive cases more than double in just the first half of this week. I think we're going to see that number continue to rise at a steady clip here in the near future. We're still not doing extensive testing in Florida, so the number of cases could be exponentially higher than it is right now. What happens when testing does become more widespread and we all of a sudden have hundreds or thousands of cases? Are Florida leaders prepared to take drastic action to stop this thing? These aren't easy questions, but we'll be watching this closely over the next few days here because I think there's going to be a lot more news. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Cordy, Joseph Rosano, and thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.